The following is a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting. It's time for To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital. A weekly visit with the healthcare professionals at Rush Memorial to introduce you to the employees and the various programs at the hospital. And now, your host, Mary Frances Friedel.
Good morning. We're here today with Dr. Savashok Sarin, who has come back to join us again to finish our earlier conversation about back pain and treatments for it, and specifically about back pain resulting from arthritis. Good morning, Dr. Shark Sarin.
Good morning, Mary Frances. Thank you for having me in this show again.
Thank you so much for coming back. We had so much to talk about last time. We talked about arthritis and the joints in the back and the different conservative treatments for it. And I think the last thing we talked about were cortisone shots, which I know a lot of people get. Now I'd like to ask you about maybe more aggressive treatments for back pain that can be used when cortisone shots are no longer working.
Cortisone shots are part of the interventions that we do for joint arthritis or facet joint arthritis, where we inject a small amount of steroids within these joints to help down, bring the inflammation. Now, this can be challenging as the efficacy of the shots decreases over time, or the process of arthritis becomes so severe that there is technical challenges to performing the procedure, as sometimes our needle cannot reach the inside compartment of the joints because the degree of arthritis. So basically the joints become a very hard capsule that we cannot access anymore.
So you're saying basically that the needle for the injection is not going to fit in anymore.
And that's the problem, that sometimes that needle will not be able to reach or access the capsule of the joint because now there is no access to it anymore. The bones basically either are fused, or the arthritis process created so much challenge that under the x-ray it would almost be impossible to reach the joints with the needle.
I didn't ask you this last time, but how do you know where to put that injection when you're doing a cortisone injection?
Because we are very close to very vital structures such as the spinal cord, we do these injections under the x-ray or fluoroscopy. We guide our needles to the capsules, and we do it in a safe manner.
That sounds fascinating. I had no idea. So you're actually using an x-ray to show you right then and there where to put that needle.
Absolutely. So we take several pictures as we gradually advance our needles to make sure that we have the right pathway and also keep structures safe during the intervention.
You had mentioned before ablation. Can you tell me what that is?
Sure. So the concept of the ablation is really geared toward bringing relief to the joint and not really curing or slowing down the process of inflammation. The ablation process typically starts with two sets of test injections under x-ray in the procedure suite. In the test injection, we direct the needles to the location of the nerves that are responsible for sensation of these joints. So we basically are not really replacing the joint, but what we are doing, we are numbing it so patients can have relief of the pain.
So you're not fixing what's wrong with the joint, but you're basically treating the nerve so that pain message isn't going to go through.
Is that correct? So okay. I want to make the emphasis that, Mary Frances, unlike your knee joints that can be replaced and we have prosthetics, for these joints, because they are so small and they are close to spine, we do not have a replacement. So we cannot really replace these joints. We can fixate these joints if they are unstable or unstable, but we cannot replace them. So the other way to go around the problem is to give numbing sensation or try to take that pain away and still have people function. Again, we use needles to reach these nerves that are responsible for sensation, and then we use a small amount of local anesthetic medications to provide that numbing for a short period of time. After the procedures, patients will receive pain diaries that they will record their pain scores for a time amount that we will assign them to, and then the result of these pain scores and the percentage of relief and increasing functionality of the patient that they report to us will make that decision for us whether to proceed with ablation or not.
So this is basically when somebody gives their pain like a number and they say, oh, on a 1 to 10 scale, I have, you know, a 6 or I have an 8. And so you're going to compare those numbers with those nerves being numbed to maybe the numbers they had before when there was no medication?
Well, they still use their medication. So it's some of the medication. So let me backtrack this a little bit.
Okay.
The concept of taking pain medication, at least some of the pain medications, is to take it whether or not you have pain. So we have different kinds of pain medication. There is a medical term, PRN, or as needed, and that's the pain medication that you take when you have pain. There are other types of pain medication that are just like your blood pressure medication. You don't take it just when your blood pressure is high, but you take it daily to maintain or prevent that fluctuation of rises in blood pressure or and prevent also the lows. Same thing with pain medication. There are ones that we take to steadily maintain our pain relief. So we'll still have our patients continue their pain regimen as they were taken before. But the goal is that if they're taking any opioid medication, we'll try to decrease those, or any other high-risk medications that even is non-opioid, we'll try to take the patients off those medications if these procedures work and they provide relief.
Okay. Okay. I guess the medication I was talking about was the numbing medication that's in the injection.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, no, that's okay. This is a very complex topic, and I think it's complex to talk about, but then that's why we're talking about it, so that our patients can come to understand it. So I was thinking, when you've given this numbing medication, you're checking to see that the nerves you have numbed were the ones that were carrying that pain message, right?
That is very correct. Okay. So after we give the numbing medication, so we typically, before the procedure, we have a visit with the patient. And the day of the procedure, we go and see the patients before the procedure. So we ask them about the baseline pain scores or average pain scores. So let's say a patient has 6 out of 10 pain on that particular scale for majority of the days of the week. And so they come and we'll proceed with the injection, and we give that local anesthetic medication to numb up the nerve. And then immediately after the procedure, we ask them again about the pain scores. We'll record that, and we give them the pain diary so they can record their pain scores every hour. We'll ask the patient to do regular activities that was pain provoking, such as bending, twisting, things like that at home, washing dishes, laundry, so they can figure out whether we really are helping them to increase their function or not. And that's what's important. The combination of increasing their functionality, whether they're now able to do laundry for that period of time, whether they are now washing dishes comfortably, or whether they are going to a mall for a walk comfortably, that plus the pain relief will give me the green light to proceed with a procedure that is based on similar to the test injections, but give them a longer time relief. That's the point.
So the numbing medication's temporary, and then if that works, then what do you do?
If the numbing medication works and we have positive results for 2 occasions, then we'll proceed with the ablation. So in ablation, we are trying to destroy the nerve endings, and those nerves are responsible, as we said, for the sensory innervation of the joints.
So they're carrying the pain message.
That is correct. So we can use heat or cold as the process for the ablation, where we destroy the nerve endings. At Rush Memorial Hospital, we use the heat function. Once the nerve endings is destroyed, patients can typically have, or what we are hoping for them to have, is more than 6 months of pain relief. I had patients who had somewhere between 6 months and 1 year, and that's majority of the patient. But I had patients who had 2 to 3 years of relief also from the ablation process. And if this works, then patients can come back and repeat the ablations.
Is this procedure painful? Because you're trying to relieve pain, but it sounds like it might be a little painful to me.
Well, unless you're very needle friendly, I assume that, you know, having a needle, especially in your back, is not a pleasant process. So definitely, I think it involves some uncomfortable feeling. For the test injections, we use numbing medications at the insertion points of the needle. The reason why we cannot use sedation for the test injection is that if we give IV sedation to patients, the patients can be confused about the relief of the pain, whether it's from the IV medications that we give them or the actual test injection. So we try to eliminate that to have a very accurate testing. Now, once the testing is done, we definitely provide sedation in a comfortable environment for the patient to do the ablation. So certainly we provide IV sedation to a point. Patients are typically not sleeping. They are still responsive to us, but it's very comfortable.
I'm all for sedation in that case. Now, what if the radio ablation does not fix everything?
Mary Frances, that's a very good question. I want to spend some time answering this question for you. Particularly on elderly group of the patient, usually the process is that pain is triggered by multiple causes. Not one thing that's causing the pain in your back. It's usually the process of two or three things, or even more, that is bringing your back pain. So we have, as we have arthritis of these little joints, we have other joints such as sacroiliac joint that connects your spine to your hip joints. The hip joint itself can be arthritic, and that can give you lower back pain. We can have nerve impingements, and the nerves, they come out between these facet joints and the vertebra. So if you imagine, if somebody has arthritis of these facet joints or inflammation or edema or swelling of these joints, that swelling even can cause nerve impingement. So you can see how interrelated these processes are. So as we do these procedures, whether they partially work or not, then we go back to the drawing table and we'll try to eliminate other causes or consider other causes for back pain.
So a nerve impingement, that would be, just in my layman's term, the nerves getting pinched?
That is very correct. So basically nerves, so we have the spinal column or that contains the spinal cord and the fluid for the cushioning. And if you think of the spinal cord as the main kind of electrical route for wires to go up and down inside your body, they come out at each segment of a spinal column to give either motor or sensory function to that part of particular part of your body.
So like the nerves going to your arm are going to come up higher in your spinal
exactly.
column. Exactly. And the nerves coming to your leg are going to come out
exactly.
closer to the bottom. Okay.
Exactly. And they come up through what we call foramens or holes. And these foramens, part of it is consisted by the edge of that facet joint. And the other part is the disc and the vertebra. So that's why disc herniation can cause nerve impingements. And that's why sometimes facet joint inflammation or swelling can cause nerve impingements as well.
All right. So if there is a nerve impingement, then what would you do?
So in those cases, then we'll work up. We'll probably need a more diagnostic imaging such as MRI imaging that can show us details of anatomy of the spine. We can also do more testing such as doing an EMG where they test the muscles and sensory functions by nerve conduction and try to figure out whether there is disruption of motor or sensory function of what these nerves are responsible for. And that kind of points us back to that impingement at the levels they come out. So there's a variety of ways and there's complex medical terminology to explain how the workup is. But what I'm trying to explain is that we'll try to figure out and pinpoint the problem and go after the second highest, most diagnostic differential in our mind to rule that out.
One thing that we have not discussed is it sounds like these problems in your back build up over a long period of time. And I bet you have patients who come to you and they are just tired of being in pain and they want it fixed yesterday. What is a realistic time frame for helping a patient with these types of back pains? Right. How long is this going to take before you get this puzzle, which sounds like a big puzzle, all figured out?
So that would depend on how complex the patient is and how many processes are involved in manifestation of the, you know, their pain. What I typically tell my patients is that the pain in most cases doesn't start over 1 or 2 days. It's been 5-10 years that this pain has been trying to build up, and it gets to a point that they don't feel comfortable anymore. But there was a degree of the pain over years and years. So I asked them to give me some time as a specialist to try to work the patient up and try to bring that relief. And that usually is somewhere between 2 months, 3 months, up to 6 months, depending on, again, how many processes we have to eliminate or bring relief to.
Well, if I'd had a decade of pain, I think investing 6 months would be well worth it.
I think that's a reasonable timeline. Remember that we have to still perform that conservative management. So we have to put patients on medications. We have to trial physical therapy. and those are time-consuming processes. I don't think it's a reasonable expectation for a patient to think that I'm going to see a doctor, whether it's my primary care doctor or a pain specialist, and I'm going to have the relief immediately after seeing them. That's mostly not the usual course of pain management.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today to discuss this. I really appreciate it. And as last time, we are out of time, but I am sure we will be having you back soon.
Thank you so much, Mary Frances.
You can listen to past shows of To Your Health. Log on to rushmemorial.com and click on podcasts. Join us again next week for another visit with Rush Memorial Hospital. It's To Your Health, brought to you by Rush Memorial Hospital on Hometown Country 94.3 WIFE. The proceeding was a paid presentation. The views and opinions expressed do not necessarily reflect those of WIFE or Whitewater Broadcasting.